There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus. Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it? The other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello, welcome to Media Geek. It's your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Reisman, and I'm your host. On today's program, there are folks who think Chicago needs a true community radio station, and they call themselves the Chicago Independent Radio Project. And joining me this evening in the studio is Sean Campbell, who
Hi.
Is president of the project. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Well, why don't we start at the top here? I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people listen to Media Geek have over the years have heard me talk about community radio, but there are probably a lot of people who've not really heard the term, or when they hear it, they think of public radio. So why don't you tell me a little bit of what Chirp and what you think community radio is, and why you think it's something Chicago needs?
Sure. I can tell you a little bit about our corner of community radio, but I think it's really interesting because people ask me that question a lot. Because people don't know. What is community radio? What does that term mean? And the fact is it can mean a lot of different things. But there are some universals. For the most part, community radio tends to be volunteer-driven. You may have a small paid staff. You may have no paid staff. That's certainly the case for us right now at Chirp. But generally, it's focused, as in its name, very locally. It's all about the community that you're in. And what we're trying to do with the Chicago Independent Radio Project is to have a truly independent music and arts-focused station for Chicago, by Chicago, of Chicago. And we're actually launching that station on the web, so we expect to have listeners all over the country and all over the world. But at the heart of it, what we want to be about is Chicago. We want to be able to focus on great music from Chicago, on what's going on here in Chicago's creative communities. And the voices that you hear on the air, you know, they're not voices that are in some studio in New York or LA that are being simulcast to 50 or 60 different stations that may pretend to be local, have some traffic drop-ins or local news, but in reality, the person you're hearing on the air isn't where you are. Everybody who's on the air is right there in Chicago. And so we launched the organization last August. We've got over 100 volunteers working on this project, and we hope to be up and running sometime between late November and late January.
And that's with the web station.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what we decided to start with. What we're doing is twofold. We're working on low-power FM issues, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little more. But right now, you know, you come into Chicago and you're a small organization with a very small budget. We don't have a spare $75 or $100 million to go out and buy a station. So the way we're launching right now is on the web at chirpradio.org. And, you know, it's affordable. It's a resource that certainly we know not everyone has, but a lot of people have access and can listen online. Web radio is growing at a tremendous rate. And so we're launching the station on the web, and we're continuing to work to secure a broadcast frequency as well.
Well, you mentioned needing $75 million to get a station, and I'm not sure people always realize that. It would require something of that order in the Chicago area. I think a lot of people think you can simply apply to the FCC, send in your three box tops and an application, and that's the start to getting a license. Why not do that here in Chicago?
Well, Chicago's a saturated market, first of all. There are no licenses available. And I think it's funny, a lot of people think that you buy a license from the FCC, and that's not the case. At their beginning points, broadcast licenses are free. And as you move forward, once you secure a broadcast license, then it becomes a commodity and people sell them. And in big cities like Chicago, the fact is, I'm not exaggerating when I say $75 to $100 million. The last independently owned station in Chicago was WNIB, now The Drive. And I believe that was in, what, about 2000 that station was sold. And it went for somewhere in the $60 million range.
Wow.
And, you know, things have only gone up since then. Mm-hmm. And so in reality, first of all, you know, there's no more room on the dial for full power stations as the law exists right now. And we don't have a spare $75 million to offer up to Clear Channel or to CBS.
Mm-hmm. Even in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, you know, central Illinois, where I was before moving up here to Chicago, stations were routinely changing hands there for millions of dollars, even in an area with, you know, reaching a population of not even a quarter million.
Right.
So it gives you an idea, you know, folks, an idea of how much money it would take even in Champaign-Urbana to get a new station where there also are no full power stations or frequencies available on the radio dial. So Chicago's even more compressed kind of situation. And another word you used a lot was independent when describing community radio. So independent from what? What does independence mean in relationship to having a station?
Well, the thing is, if you're working with an organization and, you know, you have a lot of nonprofit stations that may be affiliated here, for instance, with a university or with a church in some cases, there are public radio stations that are run in conjunction with other interests. And at the end of the day, you always have some responsibility to that organization, and there's always the potential for that organization to be able to hold something over your head to say, we don't like the way you're covering this issue that relates to our organization. We don't like the fact that you've said some negative things. Or on the other side, we'd just like you to do a little more positive public relations for our group. Or we'd like you to air this program because one of the members of the Board of Trustees would really like to have a radio program. Mm-hmm. It can go a lot of different ways. And if you put a station in the hands of the people who are running it, and it truly belongs to them and belongs to the community of listeners, your responsibility is only to your volunteers and your listeners. It's not to any commercial interests. It's not to any large figurehead organizations that you have. And so you are able to truly program the station in ways that you think will be enjoyable to your listeners, challenging, present viewpoints that may not be popular, but that you think are important, because you just, that those are the only people you answer to, the people who are listening to the station and supporting it and the people who are running it.
Now, that also sounds a lot like public radio. And there is public radio in Chicago and in the Chicago region. So, I mean, what would be different between public radio, which is, you know, often independent, run by independent organizations, they're only really for the station's benefit and funded by listeners. We hear the pledge drives. What would be different here? What are you looking to bring that to Chicago that would be different from these other things on the dial?
Well, public radio is great.
My day job is
at public radio. I'll say that right up front. A couple things are different with community radio. First off, like I said, community radio tends to be very volunteer-driven. Public radio tends to be professionally staffed. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of volunteer opportunities at public radio, but those tend to be behind the scenes. You don't necessarily walk into your local public radio station and say, I really love bluegrass music and I'd like to propose a show. And they say, okay, well, why don't you come in and come to our training session? And who knows, maybe in a couple of months you'll have a show. It just doesn't work that way. So as far as really having that hands-on, people-powered station where there's a lot of community input in what you're hearing on the air, public radio is pretty different in that way. Also, public radio tends to have a lot of national programming. You know, it's a mixture, but there are a lot of shows coming from NPR and Public Radio International. And with community radio, you may have some shows that are national. You may air Democracy Now! Or something like that. But most of your programming is probably going to originate right there at the station.
in a lot of ways that I've looked at over the last 14 years that I've also been involved in community radio, I think of it as a is that they are very complementary. And I think of public radio is really the model as public service, the idea that, you know, it is a somewhat more professional style of radio, and there's many people employed, and the idea that we're here to serve the public, which all stations, of course, are supposed to do, but perhaps public radio takes more seriously, especially when it comes to information, public affairs, and news. Community radio is access radio.
Absolutely. And I mean, public radio has resources that community radio doesn't have. I'm never going to be able to have a reporter in Moscow and in London and in Beijing, you know, and public radio does a great job of covering the world and really providing in-depth news reporting that you have to have money to do. I mean, that's the fact of it. And, you know, we're facing that in the world of the web. You know, newspapers are facing it. If you really want news that's well reported, that, you know, you're not just relying on a single source, you know, like the AP covering the entire world, you have to be able to spend the money to have bureaus in those places. And that's something that public radio does really well.
So why now? I mean, we're talking about the Chicago airwaves being saturated, a completely saturated market. There's no free frequencies to apply for. And the cost of getting an existing station, even a non-commercial one, if you could buy it, is prohibitive. Why this moment with this sort of uphill battle in front of you to pursue getting a new broadcast station in Chicago?
Well, I guess there's a broader reason and there's a specific reason
for
that. The broader reason is because at this time when commercial stations have been bought up by large corporations, the variety of music that you're hearing on the radio, the variety of voices, the diversity of voices, and the chance to actually hear local artists and be exposed to what's going on in your town has really diminished because there's so much of what I was talking about earlier. Stations aren't locally programmed. And if you have, you know, if I'm Clear Channel, and I own 40 different adult contemporary stations in 40 different markets, I'm not going to employ 40 program directors to program each one of those stations in each different market. I'm going to hire one person, or maybe four or five, and do it regionally. But Chicago is going to sound a lot like Indianapolis, is going to sound a lot like Houston, is going to sound a lot like Minneapolis, is going to sound a lot like LA. And so really that diversity is what I loved about radio when I was growing up, the fact that I could hear lots of different kinds of music, lots of different songs one after the other. And I'm a huge believer in radio. And so I feel like we need to save it. We need to preserve what's good about radio. We've lost a generation of radio listeners because they think that radio is stale and full of commercials and playing the same songs over and over and over again. So I think in Chicago, the third largest market in the country, to not have a station that is a really eclectic, adventurous music station is crazy. And the fact is, here at the left end of the dial, there are some stations that do some eclectic things. And I used to be the program director of a station that ran as Chicago's community radio station for the past decade, WLUW. And they decided to make some changes last year and really go back to focusing more inward-looking on Loyola University, the station's license holder, rather than looking outward at the community. And in doing that, they decided that they were going to force out the current managers at the station at that time, which was myself and our general manager, Craig Coyes. So that happened last July. And in August, I formed Chirp because I wanted to make sure that community radio in Chicago continued.
So you really saw the other side of that independence, where with WLUW, you had this period where you could exist like a community station and many of the features of a community station, but it was really under the tolerance, for lack of a better word, I guess, of the Loyola University Board of Trustees President Administration.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, at the end of the day, that station, that license, as they like to remind us, belonged to them, not to us. And they could do with it as they pleased.
Right. And for a lot of community stations, in fact, most community stations in the United States, at the very least, are usually independent boards.
I mean, right.
You know, owned and operated nonprofit corporations. And in the best cases, those boards are democratically elected by the listener members.
Right. And, you know, we were serving multiple masters, and I think it was a situation where it was bound to come to a head at some point, and it did. You know, the fact that we had volunteers, both student volunteers and community volunteers, the university had a hard time understanding why it was important to have community volunteers. And the fact that for every community volunteer that we had, that didn't mean it was one less student that we were serving. There was room for both. But, you know, the university, it's their job to serve the students. They figure it's not their job to serve the people out there who just want to have a radio show who have nothing to do with the university.
Well, you know, it's sort of what you see in maybe smaller college towns. They call it the town and gown problem, right? The
right.
interaction between and the service to the larger community of the universities that call them home. And I was in college radio in the late 80s and the early 90s. And a tremendously valuable part of that experience for me were the community volunteers, who to me lent a sense of stability over the years as they would stay on board and who exposed me to musics and ideas I never would have been exposed to, you know, from jazz to having reggae or Euro disco. And these folks who had cultivated their shows over the course of years, like you see in community radio.
Right.
And stayed there, providing this bedrock for the students who, you know, by and large, take their four-year turns and move on to different things. So to me, I think it's unfortunate. And here at WNUR, where we're at Northwestern University, where we originated the program, I think that the community volunteers, of which I count, bring in also some of that extra richness, and we benefit from the interactions with the students, and perhaps a little bit of the liveliness they bring to things. And then there's also great jazz programming here, and there's a great public affairs program, many public affairs programs on the weekends, including a program you probably know of called This Is Hell.
Sure.
On Saturday mornings, I would hate to see that compromised. I can say quite personally, so I can understand why. The loss at WLUW is significant.
Yeah, and I mean, we really felt that that relationship was exactly that benefit, that we had community volunteers who, a lot of them produced shows that were issue-oriented shows, and students had the opportunity to work with those people, learn about these issues. And we, you know, over the years, a number of students really thanked me for that, saying, you know, I would never have known about, you know, we have a show, there's a show at WLUW called Labor Express that focuses on labor issues. And we had a couple students work on that over the years. We've had a show called Live from the Heartland on Saturday mornings at WLUW that focused on a whole wide range of progressive issues. And students worked on that show and learned a lot and had a lot of opportunities. And I think that it really does provide a valuable service on both sides. It provides mentorship opportunities, and it really does kind of inspire, I think, the older volunteers to explore a little more, maybe in the realm of music, and get turned on to new things.
Well, you know, in community radio, one of the problems that sometimes happens is that people get almost too calcified.
Right.
And it was less so at WFT, because being a college town, there's so much turnover, including just faculty who would become volunteers and leave. But I know in other towns, sometimes it's a real problem because people do the same show for 20, 25 years. And not that they shouldn't, but there isn't so much force of change that maybe a college radio station or the influx of students brings to the fore. But, I mean, I wanted to look at then, you know, this other side of now trying to get a license. You come into, you know, a situation where there are low power FM stations around the country, but there can't be any in Chicago because they're expected to obey the same spacing requirements as full power, 10,000, 200,000, or not 200,000, but 100,000 watt stations for a 100 watt station.
Yes.
And so, does that mean Chirp is sort of joining the movement, such as it is, to help get more low-power FM stations on the dial?
Oh, definitely. That's something that we've been working on a lot. And we've been working with Prometheus Radio Project and Free Press and groups like that nationally. The way that the low-power FM service was created in 2000 was that the NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, really fought against it. And they said that they were fearful that low-power FMs would create interference with full-power stations that already existed. And Congress said, well, we're not sure about that. maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong. Right now, as it stands, there has to be 3 clicks in between every station. So if you're a station at 97.1, you can't have another station till 97.9. You have to go 97.1, click, 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 97.9. So Congress said, well, we're not sure if that's really true, if it causes interference. We'll do a study. We'll conduct we'll commission an independent study. But in the meantime, we'll pass this bill into law, assuming that you're telling us the truth, NAB, and saying these stations would create interference. Well, that report was given to Congress in 2005. It's called the MITRE report. And it showed that, in fact, that stations, low-power FM stations, don't create that interference with those full-power stations, that having 3 clicks in between is too much protection. But the law was written that way, so that means to change it, you have to go back and get a new law. And so what we've been working on is to get that new law passed. And we had a bill this year called the Local Community Radio Act. Had 97 co-sponsors. So really made some progress, got unanimously voted out of committee in the Senate, but we never got it to a floor vote. Mm-hmm. Now, that's going to come back in the new Congress. And the fact is that both Barack Obama and John McCain were co-sponsors of the bill.
Yeah.
So we know whoever's president, they're going to sign it. And it's gotten to that point where it's just about a critical mass of our lawmakers are on board with it. You know, once you have around 100, It starts having some power. And right now, nobody's working really hard in opposition toward low-power FM, but it's nobody's baby either in Congress. And so we just have to push to get it to a vote, and we anticipate when it comes to a vote, it's going to pass and it's going to get signed, and then it'll go back to the FCC to write new laws for urban low-power FMs.
Anyone who has never checked out the Prometheus Radio Project ought to at prometheusradio.org. They are... If they're not singularly responsible for there being a low-power FM, but one of the very primary motivators who motivated at the FCC and made friends at the FCC,
yeah.
Where a lot of folks of a more, shall we say, progressive political orientation would have thought you wouldn't be able to make friends, and really made the case that there needed to be more non-commercial, because low-power FM must be non-commercial, independent, because it must also be independent, community radio all over the country. And a lot of good things have happened. There's stations all over the country, but mostly in smaller cities or in rural areas where certainly there is a need for this sort of service. But I certainly agree with y'all at Chirp that, I mean, I would love to see Chicago coded absolutely from south to north, east to west in low power FM stations that, you know, not only serve Chicago, but can really serve the neighborhoods.
Right.
And not, you know, not just really the loop and assume that everybody, you know, feels the same as those who are downtown, but whether it's the far north side, the far south side, the far west side.
Well, and that low power FM is that specific. I mean, we talked about 100 watt stations, but low power FM can be from 10 to 100 watts. So it can be very neighborhood centric.
But they haven't moved to the 10 watters yet. They
right.
haven't even done, you know, and that's something else I know that folks are trying to move the FCC towards. When it was created in 2000, they said these would be 10 watt or 100 watt stations. And 10 watt stations, while tiny, can still cover, you know, a good neighborhood, mm-hmm. and they cost next to nothing to run.
Right. And when you're in an urban area like this where populations are highly concentrated, you don't necessarily need a lot of power to be able to talk to a lot of people.
So let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now. I mean, since, you know, you don't have a license yet, and certainly working with other organizations who want to create these licenses, but you're a very active project.
Definitely. And like I said, we've got about 100, a little over 100 volunteers right now. We've been working on a lot of different things. One of the things that you have to do, obviously, to get up and running, you've got to buy some equipment and build out studio space, and that costs money. So one of the things that we started right off doing was doing some fundraising, and we've been really thrilled with the way our fundraising has gone. I think that it really is telling how important this is viewed by people here in Chicago. The fact that people have come out to events, you know, we like to throw shows, we like to do DJ nights and things like that. We also managed to adopt some of the top fundraising efforts from our time at WLUW. And so some really popular events that would have just faded into the past if we'd not taken them over, like the record fair, the annual record fair and other delights that we do every April at Pulaski Park Fieldhouse. And we do another version of the record fair at the Pitchfork Music Festival every year. So those record fairs are such a great opportunity, not just for us to raise money, but also to have a chance to really get out and talk to people about what we're doing and what our hopes are. And, you know, we've gotten a lot of people who've bought T-shirts and things like that at those tables. But we've also come up with a whole bunch of new volunteers who are interested in getting involved through those events. So we love to be out talking to people about what we're doing. So we've been doing this. We've been raising money for about a year now. And now we're in the process of actually putting all the pieces together so we can get this thing up and running on the web. We have space in Dankhaus, the German-American Cultural Center in Lincoln Square.
Okay.
And we're really excited about that. We love the location. It's really central to a lot of our volunteers. There's a lot going on in the square, and the building itself is great. There's a ballroom. There's a balcony. There are some other spaces. And we're really excited about working with Dankhaus to throw events, to put on shows, and because it's a space that is it just has so much potential, and they're doing more and more cool events there. So our next step is to actually get these studios built. We've been buying some equipment. We've had a lot of equipment donated. We, you know, certainly aren't going out and spending tens of thousands of dollars on things. But we've managed to, we had a campaign to buy the main audio board. And so we were able to do that. And we've got a great, shiny, brand new board that we're really excited about. So we're going to put all the pieces together. We are putting our DJ staff together as well as we speak. And we have about 50 or 60 people lined up to be DJs at the station.
Wow.
And so we're just doing some training, doing some auditioning and training. And then, like I say, the plan is to be up sometime probably in December or January is our thought. And we'll do a bunch of launch events around that when it's ready to happen.
So tell us again the website for the Chicago Independent Radio Project.
Sure. You can go to the full chicagoindependentradioproject.org, or you can go to Chicago Indie Radio, I-N-D-I-E, radio.org.
And do you have any events coming up in the near future?
We're working on an event at the Empty Bottle in November, but the details aren't finalized.
Okay.
So I can't reveal that yet.
You can, okay. So totally under wraps. And you are a co-sponsor, though.
Right, of the Chicago Calling Festival, and that chicagocalling.org, that runs through October 12th at various locations around the city.
So does that mean you're going to have some of your volunteers out there and mingling about? Or
indeed, there will be a little chirp table with buttons and stickers and keychains and other chirp goodies that you can pick up.
So people want to go meet the chirpers?
Yep.
Is that what you're calling yourselves?
I don't know if we have a title for ourselves yet, but if you want to ask questions about the organization or sign up for our email list or even sign up to volunteer, you can do that at those tables, at those events.
Any regular meetings or something like that?
Like I say, we have new volunteer meetings quarterly. You can email us at chirp@chicagoindependentradioproject, and you do have to do the whole thing, chirp@chicagoindependentradioproject.org. To inquire about anything, including new volunteer meetings.
And coming around December or January, we'll get to start listening to the sounds of CHIRP online.
That's right.
Sean Campbell, president of CHIRP, thank you so much for joining me and telling us all about this. I really appreciate it. I'm really looking forward to hearing the station when it comes about.
Well, thanks for having me in.
And this has been another edition of Media Geek. And I will be back in one more week with more news and views on our media environment. Go to MediaGeek.net. For the Media Geek blog and the radio program, you can get it at radio.mediageek.net. So if you miss it here on the airwaves, you can catch it on the other side. Or if you want to hear something again, or subscribe to the podcast and just get it automatically downloaded to your computer. And if you have any comments about the program, please do send them to me, Paul, at mediageek.net.